Because I would have just every 30 seconds been like, that's what I sound like.
That is what you sound like.
I don't hear myself ever.
All right, this is episode 39. We're here with Michael Benner. You can find him at Michael J. Benner on Twitter.
Just Benner, B-E-N-N-E-R, actually. At Benner, B-E-N-N-E-R. Jesse knows that, I think.
Is that on Twitter or is that...
That's on Twitter. That's Twitter.
Is that Friendster? Is that your Friendster name?
I never had Friendster. I don't have Friendster. Friendster doesn't even exist anymore, Jesse.
Could have stopped it. You could have stopped it, friend.
Hey, guys. This is Josh Forbes. Welcome to the Bookshop Boogaloo podcast.
Just for the record, I have friends.
Well, that's...
A lot of them.
We'll find out about that. But if you can sense a little thickness in the air... A little bit of tension. There is some tension.
This guy knows about thickness.
Yeah, he does.
Mike, you're from Hollywood.
Well, no, I think we need to lay out exactly what's happening right now. Because
is this the longest podcast you've ever been on as of now?
I'm sorry. Is this
the longest podcast you've ever been on?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
All right, put the talons away. Okay, put the claws.
Oh, that was a real question.
Okay,
all
right.
This is the longest and worst podcast I've ever been on, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, I think this is going to enter into Marc Maron making amends territory, hopefully.
Amends is the most delicious treat Mike Benner's ever made.
I don't understand that. Yeah.
I'm on his side this time. For those of you who don't know...
Is that like a mounds joke? Almond Joy? What were you talking about?
if you can make a treat called amends.
Yeah.
Let's just move on.
It's goodness.
But we're right in the middle of a very, very thick, heated rivalry. And I guess I just want to be the first one to apologize.
Apology not accepted yet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I haven't apologized. I don't plan on apologizing.
I won't accept yours.
Well, Mike has a podcast, or used to. I don't even know if he does it anymore, to be honest.
I haven't seen it.
Stopped listening.
Yeah.
I unsubscribed.
Sounds like you're not apologizing. You're taking time to take a little jab at me there.
No. I'm just telling you the truth.
It sounded like a pyramid scheme. Sort of like something like if you listen to this and you'll go watch Mike's TV show.
Yeah,
okay. You might be associated with it in some way.
Some viral marketing
pyramid scheme is. I don't think you're aware of.
The podcast. It's what is it called? It's called like the butt.
It was called the Ben Cast.
Oh, okay,
the Ben Cast.
B-I-N.
B-E-N-C-A-S-T.
And
the T-H-E in front of those other letters.
The
space B-E-N.
The underscore B-I-N.
Yeah.
Q-U-E-S-T.
Yeah.
I think you all heard me.
And, you invited me on your podcast, and it's
graciously invited you on my podcast, yes.
Yeah, and it's... How long is your podcast?
13 seconds.
Okay, it's 13 seconds.
Yep. I thought you'd be able to handle that challenge in a mature fashion.
A light-hearted, kind-hearted, just delightful little joke... you brought me on, and I did a little... I Baba Booey'd you.
Right.
That's funny.
It was funny in, like, 1996. Gosh. It was funny about 15 years
and
ago.
Yeah, and then what happens on Twitter, I get this deluge of just filth out of this guy's mouth.
Howard Stern's the king of all media. That's a good reference.
Yeah, hello. I'm just trying, cool. You should be honored. You should be honored, frankly.
Did you just call me Franklin?
Yeah, Franklin?
You should be honored, Franklin.
Yeah, listen, Mr. Franklin.
My name is Michael
Franklin
Benner. Queer. Michael Benner. At
listen,
B-E-N-N-E-R.
Franklin and Bash.
Franklin and Bash. We're here.
I don't know how long I can keep this up. I'm
how
not
much time out, guys?
What do men's
would you
like?
Be a Franklin or a Bash?
I feel
like this is our, dicey. All
this
right.
Is like
all
our
right.
Samantha.
Right. Are you a Franklin or a Bash?
Hey, it looks like Law finally grew a pair. Isn't that their slogan?
I hope so.
Yeah, the Law grew a pair.
I'd be a Bash.
Yeah, I'd be a Franklin.
That's it. We won the game.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay,
that's exactly what I would have labeled both of you.
So. All right, I'm pulling my crazy my hilarious character mask off. Now I'm just Josh. And now we're friends.
No, we got another 55 minutes of this.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, we can probably keep this going for a while.
Okay. Keep this going.
I can't do it. That's why I can't act. It hurts me emotionally. Okay. I get too involved.
I'm sorry.
You guys can see that I'm really working.
Well, you can
Josh is crying a lot right now.
He is. He's weeping blood tears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's giggling tears.
No, but you do or did have a podcast.
I did a podcast called The Bencast. It was a 13-second podcast. It surprisingly proved an unsustainable model.
Yeah.
You think 13 seconds is not
I thought
long.
It was golden. I thought our things just ramble on for hour 15.
It's really hard. So I compensated by having it be daily because I figured it was only 13 seconds, so I would do it daily. Then you have to try to get a guest every single day, and that's just the worst thing to try to do in the world, especially when you like have a wife and a job and
it's,
in the process of like uploading and all that, like it's not a 13-second venture.
It's
break this down.
When I got my iPhone, I got my first iPhone in like December.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first apps I downloaded was the Eardrop app by Earwolf. I don't mean to be plugging another podcast network here.
All right.
I got that app. It was an awesome app, and I figured, what can I do with this app? You know, it lets you record 13 seconds of audio and attach it to a tweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, what can I do with this that nobody else has done? So I figured I'd do a 13-second podcast, and that's how it was born. And so I did about like 45 episodes of it, maybe. I had some pretty good guests. I had a few, you know, famous people or semi-famous approaching fame.
Who?
Andy Kindler, Kurt Brownaller, the entire cast of Bob's Burgers, except for Kristen Shaw, who said she was too busy at the time
for
13-second podcast. Which, I know Kristen, she's very nice, but I think that was just her polite way of saying, I don't want to be involved with your stupid fucking 13-second podcast. But yeah, it was, you know, it was fun while it lasted, but it was just, it was way too much work for me.
Yeah. It's almost, like, at that point, you could just do a full hour show, because the difficult part is wrangling the guests, I guess.
It is wrangling the guests. Yeah. I often thought, like, if we did... Like, maybe this would be better if we had people here for, like, 20 minutes. Like, people would probably actually listen, possibly.
Maybe, yeah.
If we just had, like, 20-minute, like, bursts of, like, people. Or if we even broke it up or whatever. But just inviting someone over for 20 minutes is kind of a lame thing to do.
Yeah.
It is lame. Unless, like, they, like... Unless you have a huge audience and they have like a reason to come over, and they're like, "Yeah, I want to promote my thing on this."
No, for sure. And that's not a fun conversation either.
Well,
you're here to promote something. Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, it's hard to get people to come onto a 13-second podcast. And Fred Stoller did my podcast.
Wow. Son of a bitch stood us up.
Really?
We had a date. We're gonna go follow him around at the Grove. Yeah. And that's awesome. He's like, "Yeah, come on." And then the day it was going on, it was
dead air. I'm sure he was raring to go when I contacted him. I think he might have just gotten nervous or something.
Yeah.
He seems like a nervous guy, but he's very nice and he's very eager to do a podcast. So I think if you reach out to him again, he'd love to
bug him.
But yeah, he came on my podcast to promote his Kindle single. Which is actually very good. You should pick it up.
The Seinfeld year, myself.
Yeah, it's well worth the $1.99. But yeah, he was like excited to promote it, and like I didn't want to tell him that maybe like if we're lucky, 100 people will listen to
this. Yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
Probably a lot less than that. Yeah.
But let's bounce back to what we were talking about earlier. You mentioned where you work at Bob's Burgers.
I work there, yes.
And it's not a burger shop on the corner either. It's a television program.
Yeah.
What do you do, Mike? What do you do on there?
I assist the head writers, but I've written a script and I get in jokes and stuff. I have my episode coming up soon.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What's that feel like? What's your background? Where are you from?
I'm from Philadelphia originally, Pennsylvania. Not Missouri. I'm background in journalism. I was a newspaper reporter for about like 5 years back there. Covered city hall politics and
in the town of Philadelphia?
In the city of Philadelphia, yes.
A lot of corruption going on?
Yeah, you know,
a lot of graft.
I was the city hall beat writer and I worked at a daily paper that kind of I wasn't keeping a beat. It wasn't like the Jets and the Sharks with the other reporters, but
okay.
I worked for a paper where you had to like write 5 articles a day.
Wow.
And so that means I didn't really get to delve deep into, I didn't get to do like a lot of really awesome in-depth investigative reporting. I like got to be like, well, city council voted to extend the deadline on voting on the budget increase, and like funny. Five stories like that that were like 500 words each.
Right.
Wasn't interesting at all, and I didn't really like journalism, and I started writing TV scripts on the side, and eventually wound up out here. And
that's awesome.
What kind of shows were you writing at the time?
My first ever spec script. Probably, well, I don't know. I wrote like a spec script of The Simpsons when I was like 14.
Did you ever do the thing where you're like, oh, I'm gonna write a, like, I would always do this where it was like, I'm gonna write a spec about a show that's not on TV anymore. Like, that'll get them. That'll,
no,
like
good, Magnum. A good times.
Like Simon and Simon.
That'd be great. You hear like stories about how people like wrote like an episode of Lucy where like Ricky kills Lucy and like
sure.
Body and like that got them a job. I never had the balls to do that. Like, I think as soon as I like wrote enough specs that I felt comfortable to like write pilots, I like abandoned specs forever. I started just writing my own stuff because that's what I was comfortable doing, and I'm a needy, insecure person who needs to work on my issues in a script. So
Has TV always been your thing?
Yeah, I mean, I love movies and hope to someday have a successful career doing that. But yeah, I grew up watching a TV. TV was like my parent, really.
Mm-hmm.
I was a latchkey kid, so like.
Really, what does that mean?
I only know what a latchkey kid is.
You were birthed by a latchkey.
Yeah, I was birthed by a latchkey.
I was a church key kid, if you know what I mean.
Hey-o.
Just kidding. My dad's an alcoholic.
Is that what church key means?
Well, a church key is like a beer opener. I just made that up, so. Anyway.
Oh, okay, yeah. I didn't know a church key was a beer opener.
So yeah.
It goes well with a delicious amends.
Yeah. Anyway, back to your...
I was a bit of a latchkey kid. That means, like, you don't have any parents home when you get home from school. Like,
okay.
You're just kind of on your own. And I only knew I was a latchkey kid because my friends would be like... My mom says you're a latchkey kid.
Latchkey kid, yeah.
And I'd be like, "What's that?" And they're like, "I don't know." And then like 10 years later, I like realized what a latchkey kid was, and I was like, "My friend's mom was a bitch." Like, how dare she talk about me? But yeah, I would watch so much TV and I wrote a Simpsons episode when I was like 14, and like even illustrated it because I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
But I guess like the first real spec script I wrote was probably The American Office. It was probably right when the second season of The Office was on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really loved that show, and I just started writing. I wrote like 3 specs of that, and then I moved on to write like a 30 Rock, and then I wrote a How I Met Your Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote, geez, what else did I write? I wrote a Bing Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I wanted to see if I could. I don't really like that show.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's funny you said that people writing these like, I mean, these joke versions of a script. Like I remember like talking to Wyatt Cenac, and I guess he wrote a spec script for Bernie Mac where like Bernie kills one of the kids or something like that.
Yeah.
And supposedly that's what got him a job on King of the Hill.
That's interesting. I actually I worked on King of the Hill right after Wyatt left to go be on The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so well regarded there, but I don't know. It's interesting because one of the higher up writers on that show was like the showrunner at Bernie Mac, and so I wonder if like he read the script.
It was
and,
like
what he would have thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, he's such a smart guy. Like, I'm sure he had other things going on, but that always made me laugh. And then the other piece of writing information I have, like. I did an amazing, I think I told you about it the other day. Like, I did an amazing, I did like the best podcast ever with Scott Gimple, writer on Walking Dead, a guy I used to do improv with, and like we had this whole great conversation. Then I realized like I had not hit record or whatever.
or whatever.
Oh, I don't know. I think what it was is like.
You muted the channel?
The channel was muted or something.
Yeah.
But he was also talking about how, like, you know, back in the day it was you would write a pilot, or that you'd write a spec script, but now he's like, I just write my own stuff.
Yeah, like, everybody seems to want pilots nowadays, and I think that favors the writer by a long shot, because you only, you're only setting yourself up to fail if you write a spec script. Because
you're also trying to track the line of like what's happening in that show.
Yeah.
And then you get done with it, sort of, at least in the brain of someone trying to do it. I've written a couple, and you're like, 6 months later, everything I've written seems just like, at least, in your own brain seems.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also a matter of like, if someone reads it that like ever worked on the show or whatever, it's like they're just gonna see what you got wrong. They're not gonna like be like, this person nailed the voice and I know it because I worked on the show.
Right.
They're gonna be like, this guy got everything wrong and I don't like him. And which is a legitimate thing to think because you know the show better than anyone.
Right.
But
well, that was the other weird thing is that I was always told like, don't write for the show that you want to get on. And it's like, okay, that just sounds awful. That just sounds really difficult and confusing. Like if I wanted to write for The Simpsons, I'd have to write an ep, Two and a Half Men or something. I'm like, I don't like Two and a Half Men. I like The Simpsons.
Yeah, that's why writing pilots, like the trend of people wanting to read pilots is very nice because it just means that you kind of can write about yourself.
Right.
And hopefully it's funny.
Yeah.
And then if people like it, then you don't have to like, I don't know. When I was writing specs, I would always imagine myself defending it against the people who were actually working on the show.
Right.
And like coming up with reasons by being like, well, no, it fits into the storyline here. This is why Michael is like still not with Jan at this point because it fits into like, it's like in between episode 208 and 2010.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's so like stupid.
It's very, very fan fiction-y or whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like a little bit, specking episodes of a TV show is fan fiction. It's, you're a fan and you're hoping that the creator of the show sees this and thinks you're so great that you have to work for them now.
You're right. What if Joe Bluth did work at the banana stand?
Yeah.
Oh, I bet he'd put a magic show on at the end of the episode.
What do you like about, are you enjoying writing?
Yeah, I mean, writing TV was kind of what I always wanted to do. It's going pretty okay so far.
How'd you land your hit show?
I worked on King of the Hill. That was a random set of events. I had a friend of a friend out here before we moved here, my wife and I, and he knew somebody that worked on the King of the Hill. And so when we first moved out here, he found out that King of the Hill needed a PA. And he told his friend that worked on the show, hey, hire this guy, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like a good guy. I didn't really know him at all. Cool. We've become friends since, and he's just a great person. And that's why he liked me and helped me out. So she called me, the person that worked on King of the Hill, and we talked for like 5 minutes on the phone. And she's like, hey, do you want this job? And I was like, yes, please. So I worked on King of the Hill for about 6 weeks or so before it got canceled. For the final time.
Oh, funny.
But like for those 6 weeks, it was like the greatest time of my life, and I was just like talking to as many writers as possible, and some of them kind of took me under the wing a little bit, and I was learning a lot. And I also, before I knew the show was going to be canceled, I decided I have all these access to scripts, like I should really learn the voice of the show and try to spec it. And I wrote a spec that I think is actually maybe one of the better scripts I've ever written, which was Dale. Do you know the show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dale fakes his own death for insurance money, but also because he wants a little bit of me time. He wants some space for his family. And then Bill starts comforting his wife Nancy and his son Joseph, and Dale sees this and starts haunting his own house to try to scare Bill away.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's amazing.
And I loved it. And then right when I like finished it, the show got canceled.
Did you feel it? Were you like everyone's kind of getting nervous, like oh no, like we're at the end of our run?
King of the Hill had been canceled twice and brought back already, and so they were kind of, I think, they'd weathered this storm before, and it's not like the show was doing good numbers. Fox ultimately, I guess, canceled it to make room for another Seth MacFarlane show at the time, I guess. but King of the Hill, had a really good run. It had like almost 300 episodes.
Yeah, and, yeah, that's right.
And it's a great show, and everyone involved should be proud of it. But after that show got canceled, I just had a string of jobs, and then the economy collapsed in 2008, and there was no jobs, and I wound up working at Trader Joe's because I couldn't get a job anywhere else. And about 8 months in, the showrunner from King of the Hill that I work for, Jim Daughtry, walks in to the store, and I was kind of like embarrassed. I was like, I'm working at Trader Joe's, and there's Jim Daughtry, and like I don't want to see me in my Trader Joe shirt. I don't want to see him with my button that says Mike. But it was almost like a God thing. I felt like I couldn't pussy out. God was like, this is your chance. Like, don't be an idiot. Like, go talk to him. And so I went up to him and just said, hey Jim, I'm Mike. I was your production assistant for a while. And he like remembered me, and we talked and had a like 5 minute chat, and at the end of it he's like, yeah, I've got this project that looks like it's gonna get picked up, would you want a job on it? And we kind of like phrase it as like, are you like, you looks like you got something going on here. We're like, and as soon as he said, would you want a job on it, I was like, yes, please hire me. Like,
yeah,
I was totally like, I was like, I'm so miserable here, like, please rescue me from my terrible fate. And that job ended up being Bob's Burgers. And
that's so great.
And what was really cool about it was I didn't know what it was until like a month later, when it was announced that I picked up, and Jim had me into his office and showed me the pilot presentation. I didn't know that it was created by Lauren Bouchard, who he worked on Dr. Katz, and he did home movies. And I was like a Lauren Bouchard super fan. Like, I love Dr. Katz.
Yeah.
I used to buy the DVDs of home movies and bring it home to my roommate and be like, this is what I want to create someday. Like, that's, I want to work really for this guy.
Yeah.
And then, like, then I wound up working for him. So
that's so awesome.
Yeah.
What, so what's your role on the, sorry, I'm just checking up. What's your role on the show right now? So you're writer's assistant, the writer guy.
Yeah.
But you get to write a show. You wrote a TV show.
Yeah, I wrote an episode. I kind of, the moment I got on the show, and I don't recommend this for everyone who might be in my position, but I kind of just took the attitude of like, I'm just going to act like a writer. And just keep pitching jokes and ideas and stories until someone tells me to shut up.
Yeah.
And nobody ever told me to shut up, and so, you know, I've been in the room as much as possible. I assist. I'm the executive assistant to the showrunners, not the writer's assistant, and so like, technically, my job is to just be their assistant, but they're very low maintenance, and so that just frees me up to be in the writer's room pitching jokes and stories, and I got an episode out of it, which is
awesome. That's really,
really great. Yeah.
When can people see your episode? When's that happening?
How
does that work? Like, because it's animation.
So it's animation. So you write it, and then you record it, and then they start storyboarding it, and then they send it to Korea to be animated, and it's like a 10-month process.
Yeah.
It's really boring. I'm not going to regale you.
That's wild, though. So 10 months from now.
It's my
10 months ago.
My episode is scheduled as of now to air on January 27th, 2013.
Funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's far away, but it's like, it's, I don't know. It's a really funny episode. Ben Schwartz is a guest voice, and Matt Besser, one of the best improvisers ever. And so hopefully the show doesn't get canceled, or 2012 doesn't happen, or something, and everybody.
Do you get to say, like, have you talked to Matt Besser and been like, "Hi, Matt Besser, like, I wrote this thing that you're in." Like,
is I did. Oh, geez, I don't know if I want to. I'll just say this.
We can bleep this whole part out.
Yeah, if like, I feel bad afterwards, we can just bleep it out. I introduced myself to Matt when he first showed up, and I was like, "Hey, I wrote the episode. Thank you so much for being in this." And he was like very gracious and nice. And I don't know, he has kind of a reputation for being a prickly guy.
Yeah.
And he was like super nice to me when I introduced myself, and I was like, oh yeah, like Matt and I, we get along great. Like,
yeah. We're,
like, this is swell. So he goes in the booth, he kills it. He's so funny. He has like the perfect voice for animation.
Yeah.
And so I'm not a sentimental person, but I thought, you know, I'm gonna have all the actors autograph my script because, like, this is something that, like, 10 years from now,
yeah,
I'll look
sure.
back on. Like, sure. this was my first episode of a network TV show. I'm going to look back on it and wish I had something to remember it by. So I had all the actors autograph it.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt takes a break, and he's out in the lobby of the recording studio reading a newspaper. And I'm like, yeah, Matt and I are buds. Mm-hmm. Like, we had such a great rapport back there. Like, I'm just going to go ask him to sign this. Because, you know, you kind of feel like a douchebag asking actors autograph stuff. But I, you know, I was like, Matt and I, like, he gets me. And so I go up to him and I say, hey, Matt, you mind signing my script here? And he just kind of, like, looks up at me. He doesn't say a word, takes the script and the marker, signs it. Or he, like, puts it down on the table, signs it, and then goes back to reading his newspaper, which is also on the table, and just hands it back up to me and doesn't say a word. And I was like, oh no, he sees me as just some douchebag that wants an autograph.
Right.
He, like, I was going to be like, I want to remind him that I wrote the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So he thinks I'm cool again. But yeah, that was my interaction with Matt Besser.
Oh, some people's kids.
I'm sure I don't know, it's probably annoying to get asked to sign stuff.
Yeah, but there's people way bigger than Matt Besser that are, like, super gracious and, like, hey, yeah. And people that you probably had on the episode that were, like...
Tim Meadows was in the episode.
Tim Meadows, there you go.
He was
Tim
very
Meadows
gracious.
Is better than Matt Besser.
Oh, no. No, that's not true, Matt Besser.
At Ben.
Matt Besser, I love you so much.
I'm sure.
I forget everything I just said.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
I think there is something about Matt Besser. Like, I think he has kind of a prickly air to him or something.
What's Matt Besser done?
Upright Citizens Brigade.
He started.
He does stuff. I know he does stuff. Like, but what, like,
the UCB Theater, which is like the center of all comedy right now.
And all the bullshit comedy.
I am a proud Upright Citizens Brigade graduate.
Yeah. How much did you pay for that?
Oh, jeez.
I don't know.
I'm just kidding.
One of my favorite things that Matt Besser ever did was May I Help You, Dumbass? Have you heard?
Yeah, those are so good.
His phone number was like one number off of tech support, or it was like if you called tech support and didn't hit 1-800 or something. You'd hit.
If you didn't hit the one before the area code,
you get
his apartment in Manhattan instead of the tech support center.
So he started recording it was like reverse prank calls, basically.
That's really funny.
So he was fielding all these tech support questions, and he just started kind of taking them in character rather than being a nice person and telling them that they have their own number.
All right, I'll give him one point.
My wife and I, like, I think we recite lines from that thing like almost more than anything else.
No, he's very funny, and he's like the best guest star in it. Like, he's probably done like every sitcom as a guest star.
I just don't
like
when people are dicks for no reason. You know what I mean? Like, not that he was a dick.
Maybe it's a really good article.
Maybe. I don't know. People just are. It's like, there's so much in the world.
What if he has bad vision and doesn't recognize your face?
Well, I'm not even saying that.
What if he has that disease that that Chuck Close, the painter, has, where he can't recognize faces?
What if he has that thing that Glenn Close has, where he kind of looks like a man?
Yeah, right. How is that? How do you get an Academy Award for making Glenn Close a man?
I don't know. She didn't win, did she?
I think so. I think the makeup person who did that movie won.
The Natural?
The Unnatural. No, I don't know. Whatever.
Well, Albert Nobbs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just put a top hat on Glenn Close, and that was the makeup job. Yeah.
It was just, their recommendation was no makeup, and I win.
Oh.
But, I don't know, so do you watch a lot of television? Like, do you find it hard to watch TV now that you are in it?
I'm trying to now. I have this, I sold a pilot to Cartoon Network that I can't really talk much about. But, like, as a result, I'm watching, like, as much Cartoon Network TV mm-hmm. as possible. And I love Adventure Time. I think Adventure Time is great.
See.
That's what I've learned from the process. But lately, like, I mean, I TiVo everything. I TiVo all the good comedies. I you know, I keep up with The Office, even though everyone says it's not as good as it used to be. Like, I still really like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have my shows that I keep up with, but, like, I don't know. The only shows I really religiously watch now are, like, Chopped. Do you know that show, Chopped?
I know Chopped.
Chopped is so... Chopped. It's like, it is an entire season of Top Chef in one episode of TV.
Yeah.
Like, it is... It's like, the most satisfying thing for a lazy person that, like, likes to look at food and wish he could eat it.
Yeah.
It's, like, Chopped I like, and I like HGTV a lot right now.
Yeah.
Because I just love... Like, the casting calls for HGTV must be, like, want it. Like, the least interesting people, please be dumb if possible. Like,
right.
Not, like, and if at all possible, don't realize that you can paint a room a different color.
Right.
Like, that's, like, HGTV, and I just love watching them.
Yeah.
And just being like, you people are idiots.
Yeah.
Like, you, the room won't stay pink forever.
Weaving. Yeah.
My mom loves that stuff. Like, when I go home, it's like being... Cause like I guess I don't have cable because I'm poor, but and an elitist, which is both, I guess. Like I do Netflix.
If you're an elitist, you'd have like
you
HBO
watch things
on the cable,
right? I do Netflix and like I don't sit around reading books or whatever. Books are for nerds.
You watch TV on a smaller screen.
Yeah. No, but it's just funny because like when I go home to Denver and to my mom, like it's like being introduced to this whole alternate reality that's out there, and she loves HGTV. And there was like there was a show where it's like some black guy who like goes up to people and like at a hardware store.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. And he's like, "Hey, what's your backyard like? Can I crash it?"
Right.
It's just like, who are you? Why are you filming me right now?
This weird racism test of like,
yeah.
Well, yeah. You let me in your backyard.
It was kind of like this weird.
Hey, can I come into your backyard?
Yeah.
Nothing weird. Just want to rake it.
Yeah.
It's such a weird concept for a show.
Coyly touching himself.
Yeah.
While asking the question.
Yeah, I don't know. I used to make fun of my grandparents for watching like Food Network and like in this old house and crap.
Yeah.
And now. Like now, I watch it. I don't know why. I think there's just something comforting to me about it. And I think there is an element of like now that I work in TV and all that. Like it feels like homework almost to go home and watch a sitcom.
Yeah.
Sometimes like I don't want to like study what like Parks and Rec is funny and great as it is, and it's the smartest show in the world and smartest comedy in the world, I think. Like sometimes I'm just like, ah, I just want to watch Chopped.
Right.
No,
well,
sure. Yeah.
That's how it is with me. Like with like doing music videos. Like listening to the radio. Like just listening to music really bothers me because it's like all I can think of is like, oh, how, like this song is great. Why didn't they ask me to write a video for them? Or like, I don't know. Like it does feel like homework or whatever.
Like you're coming up with concepts like while you're listening to a song and you're like writing a treatment in your head and you're like, no, they're not paying you, Josh.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Oz, you know, like there's like the Grand Master is kind of like pulled back a little bit and
I thought you meant the other Oz, like the prison.
It's like the TV show Oz.
Yeah, it's like you're getting.
You mean the Grand Wizard?
The Grand Wizard. Well, yeah. No, I mean there's which is both one and the same. Yeah. No, but the just the idea of like looking at. I know when I was at Kilbourne, that was like the worst like time creatively for me because I realized kind of how boring like television offices are.
Right.
It's like, oh, I'm at like a regular office now. Like,
yeah.
There's no magic and like fun and everything's kind of pulled back and you realize like, oh, it's just people like walking in front of this camera and doing these things and then they go and they bitch and they complain and
yeah. I don't know. I have to say the Bob's Burgers office is pretty magical. Like,
yeah.
We literally, it's the most fun place I've ever worked and
bless you.
It's so great and I only have great things to say about all the people that work there.
Mm-hmm.
And we just get to kind of screw around all day for a living. Get to make each other laugh.
That's great.
Yeah.
I sort of know. I met Wendy Molyneux a long time ago.
Yeah, Wendy's
and her
the
husband
funniest person I know. Wendy and Jeff are like the funniest couple in the world.
I met them a long, long time ago. Like I helped film something at their apartment.
Was it the ladder party?
No. This is probably like 10 years ago or something like that.
If you ever, if you have a chance on YouTube, look up ladder party.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, you should link to it on your Tumblr.
Okay,
we're going to link to that.
But I was helping film a thing for a friend of ours. It was a short called Teenage Baby, and it was like a girl. It was the idea of like this girl like was an adult baby and walked around in diapers, and we filmed it at her house. And that's all about.
Yeah.
That's the end of that story. But that's if fun. If I ran into her, I would say, "Hey, I filmed Teenage Baby at your house."
Yeah.
And who's Wendy?
She's another.
Wendy's
writer.
A writer on Bob's Burgers. She's also a brilliant improviser. She's like the funny. Like if I could, her and her sister are writing partners, and like those two, like I wish I had their brains. They're just the funniest. Who says women can't be funny, right, guys?
Right.
Yeah.
One thing I was curious about the show is like tonally it's kind of interesting because it's like it's a very almost like a family friendly show. Like it has kind of a tone of like, I mean, you could almost see it as something like made by Klasky Chupo or something, like the Rugrats people or something, like to a degree where it's like, oh, there's just kind of witty, nice banter, but then there's parts that are like super dirty.
Our show is essentially a family-friendly, dirty show. It's a show where we have transvestites like delivering like the warm, fuzzy speeches
at the
end of the episode, and we get away with it somehow. And I think that's totally the creator Lauren Bouchard's voice, is that he is at heart a family man. Like he has two kids and a wife, and he's a great dad and great husband, and cares about his family, but is also a dirty person who, you know, who loves that kind of stuff. And we pull it off so perfectly. And I think I would put our, in terms of like family warmth, fuzziness, like I put our show up against any other show. I put our show up against Modern Family in terms of like what is like the most loving family on TV. But, you know, we also, we're doing an episode where, there's a nude beach and Bob is wrestling a naked guy on the beach while his kids watch with a telescope. And like it's really weird, and but it's so, it's warm. It's, it has a heart.
Yeah.
Have you guys gotten in trouble for any like, has there ever been any like sensory like oh, watch. Watch out.
We did an episode in season one called Art Crawl. About
anuses.
Yeah, Bob's sister-in-law hanging up animal anus paintings in the restaurant, and we got a network note back that said, "Please reduce the size of the mouse anus." That was the network.
Was that
note.
Framed?
Did we framed it? Yeah. It is framed. It's amazing. It's hanging on the wall in the offices, framed, blown up to like tabloid size. It's it was fantastic, but yeah, we don't. We don't really, we're not trying to go out and offend anybody. We just,
well, and just the stuff that I think like that people say is offensive is baffling. Like, you know, be it mouse ani or whatever it might be.
Is that the plural?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Been
there. Anias.
Anias.
Nin.
Yeah.
Then versus then.
Yeah.
She won't listen.
No.
She won't get this far in, even if she was. We had a bet a couple podcasts ago.
Well, we're talking about our wives, yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
Our wives will never listen to this podcast.
Yeah, we can say whatever we want about our wives.
Yeah.
They
oh, man,
listen to this podcast.
I was having sex with, like, these twins the other day. Boys.
Ooh.
One girl, one boy, and it was amazing. And I'm glad my wife will never find out about it.
How old are they?
45.
Do teach children.
Do they live in the same apartment? I want to hear about these twins.
Well, they're right. One's a librarian, and the other one is a stewardess. And
is that a he or she, the stewardess?
The stewardess is a girl.
Okay, so
it's
she's
plural,
not around
a lot. Plural steward.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're just really nice, and I enjoy having sex with them.
Nice.
And
do they have twin beds that you have to push together? Or?
Yeah, they have twin beds, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Or
did you have to dismantle the bunk beds and push those?
What I like to do is just listen to them and listen to their feelings and their thoughts, and that's what I do.
Oh,
because your wife is listening to your feelings and thoughts?
Right, exactly.
That's really what it's about, is emotional connection.
Yeah.
What's your
I like.
You
hear
that, Andrea?
Yeah.
What's your Twitter account?
Huh? My Twitter?
Your wife's.
She doesn't have one.
Josh's wife at twitter.com?
Let's give her email out.
Okay.
Huh? No. She's a doctor. I love my wife. She just will never listen to this podcast.
And yet you have denied having sex with the twins.
Yeah. He's not denying nothing.
No. I really enjoyed it. It was really great. It was twice as fun as normal.
On the top of the mountain.
Affair stuff, yeah. Yeah.
What else are you into, Mike?
45-year-old twins. No. What else am I into?
No, what do you, creatively? Like, what, I mean, is TV always your thing? Or, like I'm so scatterbrained, I, like, you know, try and delve into, like, music and movies and all these different things.
Yeah,
like,
I just saw Wes Anderson's new movie.
Oh, how's that?
Have you seen it?
No.
Anybody? No. I like it. I'm an unabashed Wes Anderson fan.
No, yeah, I am.
It's, like, not cool to like him anymore.
So. No, yeah. Because of that, I think I'm back in.
Yeah?
There was a time where it was, like, every you know, everyone's, like, Facebook status was, like, oh, likes, like, Wes Anderson,
oh, Scott right.
Jones, yeah. Michelle Gondry. You know, it was like the big three or whatever. But then I go back and it's like he has this like nice little like picture frame that he puts things
in. Yeah,
and it's fun
and
it's
I don't
cool.
think it's bad to have things look pretty
yeah.
and nice and symmetrical.
Right.
When the trailer came out for this movie, everyone was like, Wes Anderson is making the most Wes Anderson movie yet.
Yeah.
Like I heard some kind of iteration of that joke over and over again. And turns out you jerks were right. But you know what? It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It is a really good movie, and it's really sweet, and probably his best movie since Royal Tenenbaums.
Really?
For sure, yeah.
Well, I'd like to see... I mean, part of my problem with some of his, like, movies since Royal Tenenbaums is it kind of, like, lacked, like... Like, there wasn't a lot of, like, conflict, like, or plot. Like, they looked pretty, but there just wasn't a lot there. And even though I kind of enjoyed all of them, like... There, at least with you know, Royal Tenenbaums and Rushmore and Bottle Rocket and things like there was conflict there. There was something pushing you along.
Well, I have this whole theory, and I can get into it. Maybe I will right now. Noah Baumbach ruined Wes Anderson.
Oh yeah.
Noah Baumbach / here's the thing.
Roman Coppola.
Well, I Roman Coppola is like. Is the rich man's Noah Baumbach, I guess? Well, his sister is the female Noah Baumbach. As far as, like, I'm going to write things about really rich, privileged people who really have nothing to complain about. And then I'm going to complain about things or whatever. Which, it just sucks. Because, like Wes Anderson's first two movies are about underdogs. They're about poor people. Or, not poor, like... I guess Bottle Rocket, they're kind of like middle class.
Yeah, well, Bottle Rocket, they're upper class, and Dignan is low class.
Right.
Yeah.
But there you go. But still, so you have Dignan, and then you have Max Fisher. And
Max Fisher is the lower class guy trying to make it in an upper class world.
I mean, and that's what's so great. And I really think that's what I loved
and
about it.
That's a return to that kind of form in this movie is that the main character... The boy is he's an orphan. He lives in a foster home.
Okay,
he's very poor, and he falls in love with a girl who is a kindred spirit, but she's from an upper middle class family.
Yeah,
her parents are both attorneys, but they both have this like dark bent, and they kind of find this connection and
right.
and become pen pals and
all right,
it's all very sweet, and it's like about two people who are rebelling against like their own situations to try to make a new life for themselves, but it's like they're 12 years old, and so it's like really like kind of naive and
right.
sweet and cute, but also like very adult. It's interesting.
And I like that aspect of it. I just feel like he got out of touch with what it's like to be a real person.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I heard a random like a friend of a friend worked as a PA for Wes Anderson, and he yelled at them for not bringing the right like Italian water. And it's
that's
like,
fun.
of course, that's what happens. This kid from Texas is now this hotshot director who needs specific, certain types of Italian bubbles in his throat.
When I was a reporter back in Philadelphia, my friend, she was the entertainment editor at the paper I worked at, and she knew that I was, interested in film and TV, and so she would throw me, like, the interesting assignments when they came.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to go interview all these people when they would do press junkets in Philadelphia. And I got to interview Wes Anderson, Roman Coppola, and Jason Schwartzman.
Oh, wow.
When Darjeeling Limited came out.
Yeah.
And they were delightful and nice people, but they were all wearing matching gray tailored suits.
Yeah.
That they said that they got made for them when they were in India shooting the movie.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh yeah, we each got like 20 of these. And I was like, you're a character in your own movies.
Yeah,
what are you
talking
about?
Right.
Like, I think one of them, I can't remember which one, but one of them said that, like, that's all they brought on the press tour was a suitcase full of these suits.
That's kind of cool. Actually.
It's just ridiculous.
It is funny, though, because in my brain, Wes Anderson, like, I look at Darjeeling, which I had a tough time with because I didn't go anywhere for me. It was beautiful in school. And Life Aquatic was cool and made me laugh a lot, but it again in my brain didn't go anywhere. Like it wasn't moving.
I've enjoyed all of his movies, but
no, I actually do like all of his movies, but
all have problems.
But I forget about like Fantastic Mr. Fox, which was like fucking fantastic.
Yeah,
I think that was an amazing movie, but that kind of gets like lost in my brain because it was like this sort of animated, but it probably took way more effort and like time and energy than anything else he'd ever done. I thought it was so good. Like,
I think he has a problem where he kind of maybe loses interest by the end of his movies, and then
just like it sometimes.
And then just kind of is like, all right, let's just figure out a way to end this. And then, you know, like in Royal Tenenbaums, he's like, I'll just have the car crash into the wedding,
right?
Or like, and
but that seemed like it worked. It seemed like he had enough people kind of like, you know, I don't know, lighting a little fire under him, saying, like, let's rewrite some things, before, you know, this is done.
Well, my boss has a theory that any movie that he's done that wasn't co-written by Owen Wilson will always be bad.
Yeah.
So Owen Wilson co-wrote Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, and Royal Tenenbaums, right?
Yeah.
And then the rest have been co-written by other people.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because Owen offers this, you know, this, like, snarky, like, underdoggy, scrappy, like he always has like this sense of humor to everything. Like he never allows himself to get too full of himself, except in the case in which he probably did in his own real life, and then which led him to want to kill himself.
tell us more about that.
About Owen Wilson. But yeah, I don't know. It's tough. Like
were you there when Luke Wilson came to the play of Viola?
Yeah, I was
weird.
There. Yeah,
that's pretty weird.
I ran into Luke Wilson. Like
Luke came out to this like small like play. Like the place is no bigger than the Buck Lair here. Partially because I think he was hitting on one of our actresses.
Yeah.
Or not partially, but fully.
Yeah.
And Luke and Andrew came out.
Oh, Future Man.
Future Man came out and watched a play with like 20 other people and hung out.
Wait, is Future Man a Wilson brother?
Yeah, Andrew. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Get him on your show.
I just there's something about these voice? Crazy detail oriented like I don't know.
Sounds
I have
like
this
Christian Schall.
I just watched Girl with the Dragon Tattoo with like the commentary on, and David Fincher, like it's another, like he's so detail oriented to the point where it's like whatever, can't see the forest for the trees, man. Like he's talking about like, oh, in this one scene we spent months like getting rotoscoping the background so that we could have snow passing by behind the trees, and it's like, yeah, that doesn't make a good story. That doesn't make up for the fact that like half your movie is people sitting and talking and it's fucking boring and awful.
No, but
I didn't see that.
I hate that movie.
I didn't want to. I don't know. Everyone was like, there's not one but two rape scenes in that movie,
right.
And I was just like, I'll just skip it.
Well, yeah. I don't know if the first one's so rapey.
Why do I want to see a movie based on a trash novel that that my great aunt would read?
Which
in the
is
airport?
So weird. Yeah, like
it's
after
Robin picked it up at like a hotel we were at. You know, it was like left behind kind of.
It's crazy. Yeah, after watching, because I watched the Swedish one and then I went on a cruise and like saw all these people like reading this book, and it's like all I can imagine is these. You're in the middle of the Caribbean on a boat, laying next to a pool, but in your head
you're in a rape scene.
Yeah. You're getting a dildo shoved up your butt.
I think people are much more forgiving of books in that, like,
yeah,
because the common person is like, well, this is a book, it's literature,
like, right?
It's okay.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but like on film,
like,
people are like, well, I'd never see that movie, but I'd read it in a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get... There's like... I don't know. If you guys haven't seen the movie, there's no point in talking about it.
No, let's just talk about Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Let's talk about a lot of stuff that we haven't seen.
Okay.
Yeah, what else haven't you seen?
The Hindenburg Crash. I wasn't there.
How'd you get to... Is that movie out right now? The
What Girl with a Dragon Tattoo?
No, Moonrise Mountain or whatever.
Oh, yeah. It's playing at the Arclight in Hollywood. Okay. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, didn't it make like the most amount of money for the least amount of theaters?
Yeah, it made like the best, the highest like per screen average in a limited release ever or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, did you guys see Raid Redemption last night?
No, I couldn't get anybody to go see it with me.
I'd
I
want
to
go that. See.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. In a second. I heard it's awesome.
Because this, I sent texts.
How long is it still around?
I don't know. Maybe another week or something. Okay. Who knows? But I sent texts out to friends like, "Hey, who wants to go see the Raid Redemption?" And everybody wrote back like, "I saw it. It's fucking awesome." I'm like,
"See it
it's
again?
Apparently only one time viewable."
Awesome. Yeah, I'd gotten back from Ventura and was starting to shoot my TV show.
Oh, sounds like a really good excuse.
Yeah, good.
It's a good show. Stuck in the Garage coming on Vimeo, YouTube.
Funny or Die? Gonna funny. Be Funny or Die?
Nope.
No Funny or Die?
It might not be funny.
What else?
It probably won't be funny. What else is on there? Daily Motion?
Daily Motion.
Yeah.
College Humor?
Vivo?
Vivo. XTube?
Tube 8. Red Tube.
What is this show about?
Me in the garage.
Ooh.
Me inside.
There's a lot of weird stuff in this garage. This is you running you in and out of the garage like, door over and over again.
Do people just like voluntarily upload things to like pornography sites to like do?
Oh, that would be really funny. Just to upload your own like stand up comedy or whatever,
like Daniel Sager.
Yeah. Like,
social media, right?
Yeah.
It'd actually be a funny.
Is there somebody who's like, wait a second, this isn't pornography?
Like, how could you capture that? That's a funny thing that you just did. Would you film you doing it, like,
uploading it,
so someone could see it and then say, I thought that was funny that you did that thing?
What if your like sketch comedy was like the number one most subscribed to channel on RedTube?
Yeah, that'd be hilarious. Because it's always the opposite. It's always like some Russian porno site like uploading to YouTube, you know, it's up for like 30 seconds and then it gets pulled down or whatever.
That's another good idea that I won't ever get around to.
Another thing I want to bring up, this is a non-Mike Benner thing, but maybe you can chime in.
I'll try.
So it's not up right now, but we usually have the Bob Dylan self-portrait album.
Oh my God, yeah. This is so boring.
Do you know anything about Bob Dylan?
Can we talk about me?
Oh, sorry.
I'm kidding. Go on.
So I listened to it the other day. I've never listened to this album before.
It's amazing.
It's really weird. Do you do you like Bob? I pretty much hate Bob Dylan. But
I don't hate Bob Dylan. I'm kind of indifferent to Bob Dylan. I probably listened to almost all of his stuff, but it's like always just kind of, it like washes over me, but doesn't absorb into my skin.
I keep trying to force feed myself Bob Dylan as if it's like some sort of audio.
We'll get Mickey Jones in here.
Audio vitamins or something. It was pretty good, and like I didn't realize he uses like a fake voice. Like, do you know?
And he's doing his like,
he's like country voice. He does this whole like,
listen to Nashville Skyline.
Yeah,
like,
I did
full country crooner voice.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like he does one rendition of the Boxer, the Simon and Garfunkel song.
Which, out of nowhere. He does a cover of one of his own songs, Like a Rolling Stone,
on the album
that he did like 3 years earlier. It's like kind of so
doesn't
weird.
He do it twice or something? On the, or he,
does he do it in a different fashion?
So when he does the Boxer, the Simon and Garfunkel one, it's a duet with himself with his Bob Dylan voice and then his country crooner voice.
I had heard that this album may have been one of those ones. Well, it's on Columbia, which he's been on his whole life, but I thought there was some sort of like a contractual thing that he was kind of like just giving two middle fingers. I'm like, I'm getting out of this.
I don't know. It's weird because it's like, that's what I read too. Like, because I was listening to it, I'm like, this is amazing. This is
the
great.
Wild Horses song with like all the, like the singers. Like,
yeah.
Like, wild horses in the sun.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh, this is brilliant. Like, why is this not in every Western that's been made since 1971?
It's just so good. Like, yeah, because the second or third song,
it's
like,
just weird. It's
I heard this voice, you know, because I'm like, I'm typing or whatever the hell I'm doing, and I hear this like other voice. I'm like, oh, this must be like a, you know, it's called self-portrait, but obviously he has somebody else singing on this song. And then, but then I was like looking it up, and it's like, no, that's Bob Dylan. And then I got in a fight with my wife. Not really a fight, but I'm like, Andrea, like, listen to this. This is crazy. She's like, I don't know. It doesn't sound crazy to me.
Bob Dylan makes sense in context of Bob Dylan. Like, he's one of those guys that, like, you begin to really get into. I mean, think of, like, filmmakers and things like that that you, that, like, context makes way more sense by, you know, it makes him that much bigger.
Yeah.
And Dylan, especially, like, when you realize, like, what he was doing when he was doing it, on top of, like, the things that he was, like, not even, like, all the protests or anything, but just the fact that, like, the second that he was, everyone was, like, way down with this protest stuff, he starts, like, playing jangly rock and roll. And the second that everyone was like, oh, you're our savior, 1960s, psychedelic, he makes, like, three country records.
Right.
And the second that everyone's like, oh, like, you know, folk music, this is so cool, he becomes a Christian. And then does, like some very, like, reverent, like, Christian records.
What are his Christian records
called? Soul Train and Saved. And those are... And there's one other one right after that.
Let me... So I'll play you... So listen to this. Sorry, this... So this is like Rolling Stone. So I play this. Like, I play this for my wife. I'm like, listen, this is crazy. It sounds so different than the normal version. Once upon a time you dressed a fine. It is. I think he added that.
Yeah, it sounds super added. Yeah. We need that Mickey Jones on.
Isn't that weird? He sounds like an SCTV stuff.
Totally does. Yeah.
Rick Moranis.
Right.
Totally does.
Bob Dylan.
But how come nobody's ever told me that? Like, because I'm always like, what's the deal with Bob Dylan? Da-da-da-da-da.
Because I feel like that is one drop in the Bob Dylan bucket.
Yeah.
Like, he is such a weird guy with such a long, like, career and mythos behind him.
Yeah.
Like, that is just, that's just another Bob. Like, you know,
yeah.
Bob moment is him faking a country voice.
It's so well,
to cover his own songs.
Yeah, part of his genius though is that he just, I mean, he is a really good writer. Like, his songs are really well put together and really well done. But he's, is this the what song is this? For our listeners.
The Boxer.
For context. I am just a boy. My story seldom
told. I have squandered my resistance. And it's real sloppy too. It's like all over the place. Such a promise. I don't know, man. Bob Dylan. But I've listened to this, I listened to it like three times in a row. Like, it's a double album, and I was like, I've got to listen to this again. This is awesome.
Let me, you know what I should put on as we're wrapping up, and we'll probably hang out for a couple seconds where I have to go inside and make amends with the wife who won't listen to this podcast.
Will your wife listen to our podcast?
Well, probably, she'll probably listen to the first 2 minutes and be like, hey, very good, honey.
Yeah, how does that work, being a married guy and being a creative guy? And your wife is also in the entertainment industry as well.
She runs HBO.
That's exactly true.
Yeah, the human body organs.
Here, Dana, go.
No, this is, we'll talk about this later. Just kidding.
I don't know. How does it work? It means that she will go to bed a lot earlier than I will, and I'll stay up and write and work. And she also works a lot of hours. She works twice as hard as I do at my job.
Construction, set building.
Yeah, she is a head foreman for Warner Brothers. She builds a lot of the outdoor sets. Very hands-on. Very cool. She operates a crane occasionally.
She just repaired the water tower.
Yeah.
She's
a squat woman.
How long?
She's
huge. She's massive.
Yeah.
She looks like the refrigerator Perry.
Yeah, but like a much like a mini refrigerator Perry.
Yeah,
like,
a mini fridge.
She would fit well in a dorm room.
No,
she's about the same width.
No, so Manny.
Yeah. Manny. Like right.
No, my wife is a petite, beautiful woman.
Yeah, she's lovely.
But she...
How long have you guys been married?
How long have we been married? 5 years.
Okay.
Going to be 6 in August.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there ever... So you guys were married in the salad days, where when you're working at Trader Joe's?
No, we were married when we were in Philadelphia. We got married right out of college.
Okay.
When I was still... kind of in between gigs, I was freelance writing for newspapers and magazines, and she's always been much more ascendant in her career than I've always been. I've always kind of struggled, and she's always just kind of been like, you know, she got a job right out of college in Philadelphia, and then was like climbing that ladder, and then we moved to LA, and she got a job immediately out here and has been climbing that ladder ever since. And she, like, you know, she will probably be running Hollywood Incorporated, the company that I just made up. But she's a very talented, driven, intelligent woman who people recognize that in her, where I'm just a semi-intelligent, semi-driven person that can trick people into giving me work occasionally. So, yeah.
But she's a really warm person. Like, she must, it must be nice to have somebody who believes in you. My wife believes in me too, by the way. She, for all the shit I talk about my wife,
this might be our
wifiest. What, our niche? The married guy show?
It's kind of the married
guys who say the F word on the internet.
Married guys who say the F word who probably shouldn't because they teach children or have children.
Yeah.
Do your students know about your podcast?
They things will trickle out and then I will kill them. I will kill the project. Yeah. I won't kill this
podcast. You'll kill a kid? Oh my gosh. Oh,
wow. If they find out. No, no, but there's a couple
that big dirt mound in the Buckler. Is that where you put the kids?
There's a couple suave kids out there that are clued in, sort of. One kid, I got a job working on some cool stuff with Vern.
Oh yeah,
and so he kind of like it's a weird.
But it's kind of like an arts high school, right?
Like most of the parents are pretty, you know, open and cool with stuff. And would think it's a cool thing. But
it's tough to have when you have audio evidence or whatever. Like,
yeah, and for the most part, it's okay. But there's a couple of those evenings that they're like, you know, the Josh Fadum Fat Tuesday night.
Yeah,
that I think you were texted on or something like that.
Yeah, I think you guys called me on that.
That was like a 2-hour episode split into two parts.
Yeah.
With lots of Mai Tais or it was a boozy night. You know, things like that where you're like letting colorful language fly, and you're like, okay, my goal from now on is to like make jokes and engage cool people who I really think are doing fun things, and which is amazingly fun, but not too wildly like rough.
Did I tell you the story about my friend Manny?
Tell us.
Okay, sorry. I don't know where are we with time.
We're over an hour.
Okay, let me just tell this story about Manny because it's
good.
For a while, like, we were hurting for money, so we got a roommate. My wife and I got a roommate.
Oh, Manny knows a friend of mine from.
Oh, really? But he was a teacher. He's trying to be an actor, or he is an actor. I guess being an actor means trying to be.
He's a teacher on the side.
He was a teacher on the side. And he speaks Spanish. He's Latino. And he had he went in for, like, an interview for something on the show called Jose Luis, I think it was, or Jorge Luis.
Never heard of that show.
It's like the Mexican Jerry Springer.
Is it on like Telemundo?
Yeah.
Ah.
And so he showed up and they're like, look, we'll give you $100 or whatever, but you need to say that this is your girlfriend and she's pregnant with somebody else's kid and that you need to push her around the stage or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the setup was, but it was really, really, really like ridiculous and salacious. But he's like, well, I'm here. I guess I have to do it. Well, I guess he doesn't have to do it, but it's like, give me my $100. So anyway, so he did it and was like, you know, pushing this girl around and like hit her with a chair and all this stuff.
A chair?
Yeah.
You bitch.
Yeah. And so anyway, like a year later, he was like substitute teaching and these kids, one of the kids is like, Jorge Luis. Jorge Luis. Whatever. And he's like, what's going on? And they're like, We saw you on that show. You hit a girl with a chair. And he's like, don't know what you're talking about. That never happened. And they're like, oh. And so just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I like doing entertainment-y things.
Yeah.
And I also really like teaching. And it's a tough, like, it's a tough line sometimes. But my theory is, like, if Brad Pitt were to come to our school and be like, hey, I want to teach an acting class. Everyone would be like, oh, sweet, Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
But he's, like, done drugs in movies and been naked and had sex and, like, killed people.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you can go the other way. If you'd be a teacher, not like we're having sex and killing people on this podcast.
We could.
We could.
And he did all that in Benjamin Button.
The youngin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the lost Tibet days. They just kind of glaze over.
This has been a weirdly quick and fun podcast. But I think my wife is calling.
Okay.
So people can find you at Benner.
At B-E-N-N-E-R on Twitter.
They can also find you at www.bobs with an apostrophe burgers.
/store/iTunes.pdx
.90fart.jizz
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Josh, they can find you at .jizz.
Just at .jizz. Anything yeah. .jizz.
I think.
Just say .jizz 3 times in the mirror. Josh will call you.
The jizz ghost.
Yeah.
Of Dale, from your spec script or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm at Fosh Jorbs on the Twitter, and I also have another podcast you should listen to called Mondo Movie 2.
Like that.
If you like listening to guys talk about
it, go to joshforbes.com.
Jesse, how do you feel about him having another podcast?
I like it. It's cross promotion. We're cross pollinating.
Yeah. Very diplomatic response.
We're dipping our dick.
For the first couple ones, I recorded in here, and then I got my own microphone.
I know. Cool.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.